The first thing Jesus chooses to talk about on his first recorded sermon ever in human history is happiness. It hits me every time.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Welcome. Very happy to have you here. I am joined by, how do I describe you? Should I say a legend? Should I say I don't know. However you want to be described, I'm fine.
I would just say, son of God, husband of Lorna, father of Kanan Lawson Navy, pastor of Whitestone, and I'm happy to be here today.
Taurine, it's a pleasure to be joined by you today. And we're going to talk about your life, your journey, your new projects as well. But before we get into all of that, because this is the profile and we like to dig deep, not too deep. You won't grab any tissues. If you do, then I'm sorry. But we like to know who you are. So can you talk us through who was Taurine before you became Taurine Wells, the pastor, music artist extraordinaire?
Well, I grew up in Battle Creek, Michigan, and have a really dope family dynamic. My parents separated when I was real young, but got remarried to awesome people. And so I have a beautiful family, many of whom live in Michigan still. My older sister lives in Seattle, but love them. Grew up in Battle Creek, which is a small factory town in Michigan. Went to school there, left Battle Creek to go to Indianapolis, went to college there. That's where I met my wife, Lorna, although she did not allow me to wife her up at the time.
Oh.
Years later, we met in 2004, and we got married in 2011. So it took a long time to get from the friend zone to the end zone, but we finally got there and traveled playing music, working at local churches, and then moved to Houston in 2009, which is when Lorna and I got serious, got married in 2011, started having kids, worked with my father-in-law at his church for several years. And then started working at Lakewood Church in Houston. Worked there for 5 years until we left Lakewood to move to Austin to plant a brand new life-giving church called Church of Whitestone, which we planted January of 2024. Lorna and I and our four boys, along with an amazing team. And now here we are about 16 months later. 14 months later, and God is doing amazing things.
Wow, what a journey. I'm really interested in the friend zone to the end zone, but we don't have the time to get into how you got through that in what is it, 8 years? That's a very long journey. We don't have the time to go through 8 years of getting out the friend zone. What I do want to ask you though is about your dad. So you said that you're a father to four young boys, and I've seen somewhere that you have a really great dad and a really great father-in-law as well. Talk to me about how first these two men, these two really wonderful men, and how they've helped you to raise your boys.
Well, first of all, starting with my dad, just an incredible person, incredibly talented, musically, and when I was a teenager, much to my chagrin. His vocabulary and his ability to articulate was so annoying when I was in high school, but I've come to really appreciate it now. But just raised me the best he could, alongside my mom, and my stepmom. We don't really use that language, but my dad married, my stepmom when I was 10 years old. My mom married my stepdad when I was 12 years old. And they both added incredible value to my life. But my dad's decision, we just know, statistically, the impact of a father. His decision to follow Jesus after his divorce from my mom was the most game-changing, pivotal point in my own life, in my own trajectory. And had he not made that choice, I don't know where Jesus would have found me. And I'm so grateful for that. But it was manners, respect, integrity. These were common themes in my home growing up. And then my father-in-law, really, I went through a difficult time with the church in general because I was making music that was not choir music and not praise and worship music. And people had a really hard time with that. And then I was dancing and all of that kind of stuff, and people had a hard time with that. And then I got signed to a record label, and people had a really hard time with that. And I got the disappointment of the realization of conflicting messages. And what I mean by that is, when I was growing up, I heard so much preaching, this generation's going to write the greatest songs in our time. This generation's going to take the gospel further than the previous generations. This generation is going to do something great for God that doesn't look like anything the previous generation has done. And then I felt like I was doing that, but then I was villainized for it. I was not allowed to lead worship at certain events or canceled from youth conferences and things like that because of the route that I was taking that was not familiar to everyone else. But I thought that's what I had been preached into my life. And so there was a lot of disappointment that I carried in spiritual leaders and pastors who seemed to be in competition with the worship artist because, truth be told, the preachers were the real rock stars of the Christian world. And the worship leaders were the supporting acts. Well, if you get enough energy moving your direction and you get enough, we'll call it clout, then that can kind of flip and people can be more excited about the person coming in to do the after party than the person preaching the word that night. So I felt that tension, and my father-in-law came into my life and was basically like the voice that gave me permission to become who God called me to be. And he reiterated the role of a pastor and a father that said, I believe in you. I believe in your unique gifts. I believe in what God's given you the exact way he's given it to you. I believe in your songs. I believe in your ministry. And blessed me in his generosity, blessed me with platform, with time. And it really gave me a new affection for spiritual leadership and a new trust. And that trust has served me so well up to this point, thank God. But I, long-winded answer here, but I believe every person needs a pastor or a spiritual leader that is willing to pour into them and allow them to evolve into who God has called them to be, not even necessarily who that spiritual leader wishes that person would become. And that is a great gift that we can give people.
Wow. It sounds like you have had some really wonderful men help you to shape you into who you are today, which so many young men don't get. That in and of itself is such a blessing. I don't know if you're aware of the conversation happening in the world at the moment. There's a show that came on Netflix. It's called Adolescence, and it's all about young men and how they're just very much in a place of disarray. They're making terrible decisions. There's a lot of misogyny. For the young men who haven't been blessed with these types of role models, dads, pastors, what would you say to them to find them and to avoid the pool of the Andrew Tates of the world, to avoid the pool of, you know, you can just get rich and whatever it is Andrew Tate is selling and whatever his brand of man is, what would you say to that young man who's just a bit lost and he's like, where do I go? Where's my positive male role models?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I'm not as familiar. I haven't watched Adolescence, so I'm not as familiar with what's happening yet. I'm usually a late adopter to all of those things. But this isn't the first time men have been undermined. And I even go back to the birth of Jesus, where an entire generation of young men were swept off of the planet. And there, I believe that there is an attack on manhood. I believe that there is an attack on the spiritual development and the emotional development of the man. That even, and I want to be very careful with the way that I say this, because no one is more pro-woman than Jesus. Jesus broke every societal norm to amplify God's heart toward men and women, but in particular women, how crucial the role that women play in society is, and how expansive the role women can play in society is. Many people's problem with the gospel is that the first person to see the resurrected, to carry the message of the resurrected Savior, was a woman. If you were to make up Christianity, you would not give the message of a resurrected Savior to a woman because of how they were viewed socially in that environment. And so Jesus even amplifies the significance of the woman and how the story of the gospel plays out. That said, we need to understand that God has a place and a role for men and women, and that He has designed us to work complementary to each other, to reveal God's heart for family, to reveal God's heart for society and culture. And I feel like in an effort to elevate women, we believe that the only way to do it is by cutting men down. And if we continue to say the future is female, then that makes the male feel irrelevant. Well, if the future is female, there's no need for me. I believe that the future is kingdom, and God's kingdom uses men and women. And if you're a young man looking for a role model, I say look at Jesus, because He valued everyone, because He understood His value. And I think a lot of young men don't have the affirmation of a father, and it's a vicious cycle. And I think the reason why Jesus was able to carry out His mission is because the voice of the Father spoke and said, "This is My Son in whom I'm well pleased." And the heart of the Father is pleased in young men and walking in their purpose and identity. And strong young men raise up other strong people, men and women. And I think it's something that we can't overlook or undervalue.
You know, I really pray that a young man, when he listens to this, he really feels that, because I feel as though you are 100% right in that young men, the ones that don't have these men in their life, there's an absence of affirmation. There's an absence of just building them up. They're just disregarded. They're feeling disregarded. And then they just run off into this really detrimental direction. But I'm really praying that what you've just said will touch a young man that is listening, and he'll make that change.
Me too.
This is why you're in ministry. You're preaching, and this is why you're here. But This wasn't always the case. You wasn't always a pastor. You were a music minister, of course, but you made the transition to pastor. And that must have came with some hardships. They always say, what's that saying? Another level, another devil. I don't know if that's true, but this is what you get told. Talk to me about the preparation process that you and your wife had to do in order to move to this other level of becoming a pastor of a church.
Wow. That could be a whole conversation. I've never even thought about it like that. There's a lot of preparation, and it happens over a very long period of time. I think of every season of my life really as preparation. I feel like God has been Mr. Miyagi-ing me for a long time, doing a bunch of stuff that I thought had no connection to my future. And If I were to speak back to my 10, 12, 15, 19-year-old self, I would say, pay attention. You're going to need this. You're going to need this. You're going to need to know what this tension in a home feels like when you counsel a family that's on the verge of divorce. You're going to need this. You're going to need to know what the pressure is in a public school environment to authentically live your faith out, feeling like you're an alien when you're ministering to high school students. You're going to need this. You're going to need this homework that you don't want to do in Bible college because you're going to be teaching theology one day. Just, I had no connection to the ultimate thing that God was wanting to do in my life. So I would say, pay very close attention to all of the lessons that you wish you could just blow past in your endeavors to get to some preferred future. You're going to need everything you're doing, even though it feels disconnected. And then there are the very practical things that we did to prepare, starting with like the surgery God did on our hearts, you know, tipping over idols and thought patterns and through counseling and therapy. The practical side of going to a church planting organization and having our finances assessed, asking questions like, how many neighbors' names do you know? And how many of your neighbors have been in your home? Like, there were some very practical checkpoints of like, do we really love people? Or do we really love the idea of being a pastor? Wow. Do we really love people? Do we really just love the idea of preaching? Because those things are not all synonymous. And so there were some very practical things. Then there was a financial development. Just so many aspects to become whole enough to be able to handle the weight that comes with this particular role. And it's been painful at times, and it's still painful because we're still learning so much. But there's been a lot of practical development to get to this place.
He may have written some of your favorite worship songs, but Torrin Wells was once told he didn't belong in church. In this month's Premier Christianity magazine, Torrin shares how God got him through. Plus, we speak to the veteran evangelist Ray Comfort and profile the biggest Christian summer festivals you don't want to miss. Subscribe today and we'll even send you Andy Bannister's new book completely free of charge. Visit premierchristianity.com.
You know, when you said about testing to see, I guess not testing, but checking to see if you really do love people, this is me probably just being very naive, but I didn't realize that that was something that people had to be quizzed on and tested if you want to become a pastor. I thought that people just became pastors, but actually that is the most fundamental part of being a pastor. Do you love people? Can you manage people?
Yes, exactly. That is the heart of a pastor. And I think a lot of people do ministry for a lot of different reasons. And it's easy to actually go in with pure intentions and not end up in the place that you started for a lot of different reasons. Success or failure or whatever can throw you off of your original intent. But it's something that we help people with now. I've got it somewhere, this book, The Way of the Shepherd. And it's just about being with sheep. And I read it before we started, and I had to do a heart check of like, are you down to really just get in the trenches with people? And that was the thing that actually excited me the most, because I defined my why probably as a 23-year-old. I feel like I got great clarity on my mission in life is to call greatness out of others. And I tried to use music and all of these things to do that. And to a degree, it does. Nothing gives you a greater opportunity to develop and deploy people in their greatness than being a pastor. And that's the most exciting part about what we get to do.
I want to come to your church. I might just move to Texas.
I wish you would.
Me and my fiance, let's just pack up our stuff and come.
I wish
Texas.
You would. Don't play with my emotions.
Gosh. Come on. When it comes to ministry and, I guess, mapping out a life in it, I guess there's a lot of thought that goes into it. As you've just described, so much goes into it. But have you ever made a step prematurely? And if you did, what was the outcome? What happened? And if not, how do you make sure you don't make any steps prematurely?
Welcome to my life. Premature steps. I think one of the greatest things I've had to wrestle with is pace. It's God's timing. I think I became aware of God's calling on my life to plant a church when I was 20. And I read a book by Nelson Searcy called Launch. And it was describing people planting churches in middle school cafeterias. And I was like, I want to do that. That sounds amazing. Well, the problem is I wanted to do it immediately. So I was in Bible college, got my friends together. I'm like, hey, let's plant a church. Let's move to Mountain View, Colorado. Why? I do not know. And plant Mountain View Church. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. That's really why we started the band. We started a band as kind of the spearhead to galvanizing a path toward planting a church. Of course, we never moved to Colorado to plant that church. I raised my hand in one of my classes and I said, Professor, what do you think about a group of guys going to plant a church as a band and just seeing what God does? He's like, that's a terrible idea. You should not do that. And he was right. So we didn't do it. Well, then fast forward to 24, Mary Lorna, we're working in her dad's church. And I'm like, we've got to plant a church. I go to Lorna 2 years into being married. I'm like, we should move and plant a church. She's like, are you crazy? We're not doing that. And so I dropped the subject, never talked about it again. Till several years later, God started stirring something in her heart around this idea of planting a church. And I'm like, okay, all right, here we go. We go to our pastor, her dad, my father-in-law. I'm like, God's calling us to plant a church. Aren't you excited about it? It's going to be awesome. He's like, that's so good. I'm glad that God's opening your heart to pastoring. Why don't you go ahead and get back to what you were doing here? And they never mentioned it again. I'm like, I thought I'm supposed to plant a church. I've been holding this now for 10 years. And finally, we went to them and said, we're really feeling God's hand on this. What do you think about this process that we have? And they couldn't believe it themselves, but they're like, we're releasing you into this ministry. And even then, it wasn't until 7 years past that point, 2024, that we actually saw the church come to fruition. And so it was 20 when I felt called to do it. It was on my 36th birthday. Is that right? 36. 30, yep. My 37th birthday that we announced Church of Whitestone. And so it's just holding that and then being obedient. It's yes every day to every little thing that you think has nothing to do with what God's calling you to. And now I look back on the last 17 years and I'm like, I've needed every single bit of these experiences to help me and the people with me flourish in this season.
That is such a lesson of just sitting on what God has told you to do, because oftentimes we don't. we get the word and we just run, and then you crash into the ground and you're like, but God said this was my thing. But it's because we didn't wait.
The spiritual maturity that we need is knowing when our yes to God requires immediate action, and knowing when our yes to God requires delayed response. And there is a real trust in following after God's presence to know the difference between the two. Because some things, if you go slow, you're being disobedient because he asks you to do it immediately. And then in other situations, if you do it immediately, you're being disobedient because God's given you a vision, but it's not yet time for that vision to be acted upon. So praying for that discernment of, is this a now or later thing, and allowing God to lead you into it at his pace.
You could write a whole book on that. You could write a whole 10 series set of books on just that, that one thing. You mentioned your wife quite a lot. I want you to talk to me about your wife and how she's, it seems like her being in your life has just completely transformed it in terms of her dad being the one that gave you the keys and you ran off, and, you know, her spirit stirring about her wanting the church to be planted. Talk to me about your wife.
Yeah, she's the key. She's the key. She's the one that God uses to unlock the doors. And it's her discernment, her wisdom, and her prayer life, honestly, that reassures the directions that we're feeling from the Lord. I always tell people all the time, if it weren't for Lorna's prayer life, we wouldn't be married. It is her ability to connect with God that has helped us so much. But she, coming from a ministry family, just has a lot of great natural instincts. I don't know how else to describe it. I think some of it is environment. Some of it is how she was raised. Some of it is just a spiritual aptitude and gifts that she has. But she has like a boldness about her to do whatever God has called her to do, and a self-restraint to be okay to not do anything God has not called her to do. So she's not in a hurry to make much of herself. She wants to serve people and serve God and love her family and serve her family. And it's amazing. She's an incredible homemaker, but she has incredible leadership gifts. And so there's been seasons, and she talks about this publicly, where God called her exclusively just to work in our home. And she was ticked about it because she has so many other things that she's interested in. And she said, she says this story. She's like, I got behind my green couch and I was having a pity party and throwing a fit with God and saying, when are you going to let me get back to what I'm called to do? And since we had three kids at the time, the Lord gently spoke to her and said, your family is what I've called you to do for this season. And for the next 5 years, she worked in our home. And it was honestly unbelievable. The organization, the flow, all of that. She used all of those administrative gifts right here in our house. And it served us so well. It also gave her a season to catch her breath. Because when you grow up in a ministry family, you may not be getting paid, but you're working too. And then she was on staff as the worship pastor for 10 years at her parents' church. So when she got that 5 years, that the first couple she really struggled with, she realized God was resetting her for the next 50 years of impact she would have leading Church of Whitestone. And now looking back, she realized, oh, I needed that. And it was the catalyst for the ministry she's doing now.
She sounds like a really amazing woman. And I watched in this interview that you did with, oh, what's his name?
Tim Ross.
Is it Tim Ross? Yes. Yeah, and you were talking about how in that particular church, not everyone was okay with your race. And it got me thinking about the fact that she grew up in this place where she probably heard a lot of conversations about all different kinds of people, but yet she still chose to be with you and then stuck with you and then continued being with you and supported you. And I just thought, man, that's really bold. And thank God that she made that bold move, because if not, all of this wouldn't be happening. So, yeah, I heard that and I thought, what a great woman.
Yep, you're absolutely correct.
We've had a really great conversation, and I want to just end by talking about your new projects. So you planted a church, you just dropped an EP, you're releasing your debut book called Joy Bomb. What is a joy bomb?
Yes, a joy bomb is the life of Jesus expressed in our own lives in a way that decimates every presupposed idea we've had about joy. And I am so passionate about this message, not because it's a book, but because this is the first thing Jesus decided to talk about. And I really want that to hit your listeners like it hit me. I want you to think about this for a moment. Jesus shows up in human history and splits it in two. He is the most formidable figure of all mankind in time and eternity. And the first thing Jesus chooses to talk about on his first recorded sermon ever in human history is happiness. I when I say it today, and I've said it 1,000 times at this point, it hits me every time. I'm like, God, of all the topics in the world that you could have chosen to address first, the first thing you wanted to address was how to be happy. And some of people would be like, no, there's no way that's the first thing Jesus talked about. In fact, it is the first thing Jesus ever talked about. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5. Jesus, I love The Chosen. It sets this whole scene up so good, because he's like us. He's thinking about, what am I going to say? Like, how am I going to say this? And he's like kind of going through it, you know, not this, but that. And for some reason, when Jesus starts, the first word that he says is blessed. The first word in his inaugural message is blessed. Well, this makes a lot of sense if we look at the history of Scripture. The last word in the Old Testament is curse. The first word Jesus says is blessed. Could it be that Jesus is reorienting the human heart and experience once again away from where we ended up, which was with a cursed life under the law and under the laws of sin, back to God's original intention that he had for us in the garden in Genesis 1, where his first interaction with humanity was blessing? We all like to quote, he told them to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. But a few words right before those words is God's actual first action toward humanity, which shows his primary emotion and heart toward humanity, which was he blessed them and told them to be fruitful and multiply. And so God's original heart toward humanity is that we would be a blessed people. Well, we can't look up blessed in Webster's dictionary to determine what that means. Webster wasn't born yet. We have to look at the original words. And the original word for blessed is, you guessed it, happy. So the first thing Jesus chooses to talk about in his first recorded sermon ever is joy.
You know what? And that is so amazing, because in this day and age, people don't chase that. People chase the money, they chase the fame, they chase all these other things. But actually, if we was just to take a step back and chase the joy that the Lord has.
Yes, and they think they're chasing joy when they chase money, and we think we're chasing joy when we chase the girl, and we think we're chasing joy when we chase the club, and we think we're chasing, even in the achievements of our children, we think we're chasing joy. And the truth is, we are, but we're following the wrong things to get to the best thing. We actually don't run externally to find joy. We actually run into the inside. It's the character of Christ being formed in us, and that's what this book is about. It's actually not just about the Beatitudes. It's not just about ideas around happiness. It's about the person of joy, and that is Jesus. And I'm so excited for people to experience him.
I'm very excited as well. You just talking about that made me want to get a copy tomorrow. It's not out yet, but it's all right because as soon as it is, we are there. Torin, thank you very, very much for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I'd love to do this again and get into more of your life and your journey. But for now, I'm going to love you and leave you to the rest of your day.
And Cassandra,
Yes, I'm going to fly out with me and my fiance. We're going to fly out.
through.
That was me, Cassandra Maria. Hope you've enjoyed my interview with Torin Wells.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.
O'Reilly Auto Parts puede ayudarte a revisar tu luz check engine, luz ABS o luz de mantenimiento con O'Reilly Veriscan. El servicio es gratis y recibirás un informe con soluciones verificadas por técnicos maestros certificados ASE. Si necesitas ayuda, O'Reilly Auto Parts te puede recomendar un taller. Pregunta por O'Reilly Veriscan hoy mismo.
Oh, O'Reilly.